Welcome back. First time, long time. Philly's first ever sports podcast that existed only during the Eagles playoff run that didn't get listened to by any of the powers that be for approval. And now we're back because fuck it. If there's one thing Philly sports needs, it's more Philly sports takes from Philly Sports Radio. So I'm Smitty. I'm joined again by first time, long time veteran Roan, as well as producer John Kelly. And we got Barstool Jordy in the house. Jordy, how we doing?
Doing great, guys. Just happy to contribute to the City of Champions.
Naturally, naturally. And now your Flyers are kicking off, dropping the old puck tomorrow night, as well as the Sixers pretty soon. When does the playoffs start? Next week?
Sixers are, I think, the final game, or like the 14th, I think, the playoffs start. So that's pretty soon. What's that?
We got the Hawks tonight. I think they're like -9.5, and then the Bucks either tomorrow night or 2 days.
A day off, right?
Yeah, they got to win both games to clinch that 3 seed and probably get the Bucks again. Maybe the Heat.
It's stacked up below us. We don't know yet.
So got a lot of things happening here. So first time, long time. It's a call-in show. We try to keep it as close to a Philly sports talk show as possible without getting into the bullshit that the Garganos and Missinelli's and all those. Nah, I wouldn't say they're hack jobs. You can't say that. You gotta respect them.
But you say that out of respect. We say that they're hack jobs out of respect. It's like there are hack jobs.
Yeah, if they weren't big enough to get the respect, then we wouldn't be trashing them. Put it that way. But the call number is tweeted out. If you are listening now, you obviously have that number, so we don't need to get it again. Because I don't even know it anyway. I usually just give out my landline number that I grew up in.
Just give the home phone. Just talk to my mom about it.
Absolutely. She loves it. So we'll hop right in. We got Ed talking a little Ben Simmons. What you got, Big Ed?
Hey, Jordy. This is from the boys at 34 Street Market. Little shout out. OCNJ, greatest spot in America.
We're getting a live performance? Are we about to have a live rendition of
I don't know. We're getting Sixers? Ocean City, New Jersey shout-outs already. People think this is getting listened to by millions of people. It's getting listened to by a dozen people who are not going to meet you at Manco and Manco's.
Is it Manco and Manco's now?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mac got screwed.
Fucking Mac, man.
Yeah.
Tax evasion.
Big embezzlement. Embezzlement charge. I think that was like 2 years ago.
So, wait, did he call in to play the Sixers song?
I don't hate it.
I love it.
Big Ed, do you actually have a question about Ben Simmons or what? You kind of got to let it ride.
He's not lying. Wow, this is a pretty good point that he has right there about the scoring that they'll be doing. They'll be 1, 2, 3, 4. Usually that's how it goes.
Something like that.
But, chronologically. But we can talk about Ben Simmons, though. Like, let's not let him derail what we really have to talk about. Ben Simmons is about the hottest player in the NBA right now. I'm pretty sure he has the Rookie of the Year all but sewn the fuck up. And a lot of people will argue with that, saying that Donovan Mitchell might have an argument. But I don't think that that's really the case. Can you make an argument for Donovan Mitchell?
You can, but I think over the 14-game winning streak that the Sixers have had, which is tied for the longest streak in franchise history, Ben Simmons has absolutely established himself as not only the best rookie in the NBA right now, but one of the best players. He's averaging a triple-double over the 14-win span. And Greeny had a blog where this little nugget was put out there that is the only time during a 10-game winning streak ever in NBA history that a player has averaged
a
triple-double.
Not just a rookie.
Ever. So I can't fathom how Donovan Mitchell ends up winning this NBA Rookie of the Year award, which doesn't matter because Ben Simmons doesn't care about that. He doesn't care about individual accolades. He wants the championship. That's it. Give it to him. Let the big dog eat.
I thought he cared a little bit, right? He said, definitely.
I know. I'm just trying to make him sound better. He came out and said, like John Clark, that he wants the defensive MVP.
I think you got to say that, though, because it is annoying that it is as close of a discussion as it is. So I think it's good for him to come out and promote himself a little bit and just be like, yeah, it's me.
He's a dickhead. My bad. Jordy, go ahead. What are you about to say?
Oh, well, I'm saying some sabermetrics for everybody at home listening. Mm. Donovan Mitchell has 0 shirts on BarstoolSports.com, and Ben Simmons has the Fresh Print shirt on BarstoolSports.com. So you can buy that at store.barstoolsports.com. But, I mean, I think that kind of you know, that says all you need to know about this Rookie of the Year race. You know, it all comes down to merch, and Ben Simmons right now is sweeping the category.
Ben Simmons has more shirts ceased and desisted off the Barstool Sports website than Donovan Mitchell will ever have on this site or anywhere across the land. I think we had like 6 Ben Simmons shirts taken down.
Really? Yeah, he keeps taking them down?
Yeah, we had a couple Raise the Cats taken down last year. We had a great one of my favorite of all time designed, where it was Franklin, the mascot, the one they have right underneath the basket with Ben's face on it.
Damn.
Yeah, so only a matter of time before the Fresh Prince is dust in the wind. So get that at BarstoolSports.com.
And Jordy, good on you for bringing some stats to the table. Obviously, we have a lot of opinions out here, but for you to just really hunker down and get in the stat department, it says a lot about your character.
Exactly.
Let's the no nonsense zone.
Let's move on now to Big Nick. He's got a couple of Ben Simmons tidbits as well. Nick, what you got, my man?
What's going on, fellas? Just want to start by saying, Wildwood Boardwalk, you got Max over Sam's all day. You know, going off the little Mac and Macca thing you said earlier. But I wanted to say, what do you guys think about his future shooting? He's attempted 3 threes this year, but they've all been with like 1 second left in the half, and he's just been launching it down the court. And I'm really concerned, like, if he develops a 3-point shot, he might be one of the best NBA players to be on the court. Like, he'll take over for LeBron for sure.
Well, people don't remember that LeBron wasn't exactly the freshest shooter his first couple of years either. Granted, he wasn't stiff as a board, never even attempted a jump shot outside 15 feet like Ben Simmons is. But there's plenty of time to develop.
I think that LeBron shot something like 41% his rookie year. But the thing about that is he was shooting threes. And I just worry a little bit that at least he's taking his shots. And I do worry that Ben isn't taking them. But, like, if you look at the rest of his game, it's so complete that for him to even think about being, like, the offensive shot creator or, like, to be a shooter, like, that's not his role on this team. So that can – I mean, that's something he's obviously going to work on because he's a tenacious, driven guy. But that's not really how he fits into this team.
But once he does, and he will, it's game over. It's like playing with Game Genie out there. It won't even be fair. That's what I'm saying.
Like, the dude's got so much potential. If he develops a three, he's just going to be unreal, you know what I mean?
And it's not like he isn't working on it. In between games and warm-ups, there's always clips of him having a nice little set jumper. It's a little bit wet out there.
True,
it's a little bit dribbling. But he grew up not even having to worry about a jump shot. That's what's amazing. All the way through his young career, all the way through LSU, he really never had to realistically take a shot outside the paint. And if he can get away with it in the NBA, which he has been doing with success thus far.
And doing it well, yeah.
Exactly. There's really no reason for him to stop his game in the middle of an NBA season and try to adjust it, a la Fultz.
He gets into the paint so well. One of his best characteristics. He'll create a fast break out of nothing, and he just gets into the paint. And so for him to stop getting into the paint, like, he'll collapse a defense on him. And we have a lot of shooters right now. He frees up a lot of space for these shooters. So him collapsing the defense and getting into the paint is one of his biggest skills. So hanging out on the three-point line doesn't really make sense right now for us anyway.
Now, I can't even remember a rookie that has impacted the game this much as a point guard. As a force.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I think he's a lock for Rookie of the Year. On court, he's been the most impactful rookie for sure.
We had another rookie point guard some time ago, back in 1996, our guy Allen Iverson.
That old AI guy.
I think he dropped 40 points in 5 straight games as a rookie.
But he wasn't a true point guard. He didn't really exhibit that much success until Larry Brown moved him to the number 2 spot.
No, you're exactly right. And I just that's my question, though. Who do you think has a more impactful rookie year? Allen Iverson, with all of that scoring that he did, even though they weren't really winning, or Ben Simmons, and while he hasn't been scoring as much, obviously we're one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference.
I got to go Ben Simmons. The man averages basically a triple-double. I just imagine what he's going to be doing 3, 4, 5 years from now when he does have that Russell Westbrook experience behind him. Like, he could be averaging 20, 20, and 10.
I mean, it does. It seems feasible, but we have to give a little bit of respect to Iverson. He was doing it without the supporting cast. If he had an Embiid, I imagine that he would be a very different player.
Yeah, but Iverson's scoring is done without the supporting cast. That's what Iverson does. He's a chucker, and rightfully so. That's what he did well.
Score.
Yeah. He didn't need any of that.
But I think what Simmons has done without Embiid has locked it up too. I think if Embiid was still healthy, we still have the argument. I think.
Or if they had been losing when Embiid went out.
Exactly. Well, because it happened the way it did, it's just everybody's paying attention.
Listen, they have been doing so much so well without Joel Embiid, and the amount of depth this team has is really unheard of in recent NBA history. Listen to these guys that are getting, 10, 15 minutes plus a night. You got Ben Simmons, Covington, Saric, J.J. Redick, Amir Johnson, Rashard Holmes, who's, him and Johnson's numbers will go down once Embiid comes back, Marco Bellinelli, Ersan, Markel Fultz, and T.J. McConnell. And then you got Furkan and Justin Anderson on the bench who aren't, schlubs. They're not Henry Sims and Larry Drew out there, who are borderline D-League, G-League guys. I mean, the Sixers 1 through 12 have got fucking talent up and down. They're playing so well together, which kind of scares me when Embiid comes back a little bit. That's a good problem to have.
Yeah, we'll get there when we get there, right? It's a good problem to have. But Bellinelli is the type of pickup that wins you Executive of the Year if you get a deep playoff. I mean, that guy has fit in perfectly. It's when you can pick up guys like that to add to your rotation. I mean, it's exciting to look at the depth. Because in playoffs, too, that's where you really need a deeper bench. And you gotta I'm sure you can speak to that. I mean, once we get the matchups to look at, it's gonna be exciting.
Exactly. Big Nick, thank you very much. I do have to say
thanks, guys. Keep it up.
I appreciate that Max Pizza in Stone Harbor, 83rd Street, takes the cake when it comes to down the shore.
I used to work at a Michi's in Sea Isle, which then became Phil's, and I don't even know if it's open anymore.
You know what, Ron? I'm going to get to this little dilly right now that I never brought up before, but I just remembered. Someone stopped me down the shore last year in Avalon, or maybe it was even 2 years ago. No, it had been last year. And we were talking, and he said that you delivered him a slice of pie in Sea Isle. And wanted to talk rap battle.
Bro,
delivery boy pimping out your battle raps.
I was on top of it. I've had people recognize me on the street before. I'd be like, they'd be like, yo, where do I know you from? I'm like, I'm trying to be fake humble. what is it, the rap battles? No, probably not. I don't know, Barstool? No, I don't think that's it. And I know where I know you from. You used to deliver my pizzas in Sea Isle. Oh, yeah. I guess I did that, too. It's a humbling moment.
Dude, you deliver pizzas, you sling posse, you do what you have to do to survive.
Hell, yeah.
What was that, Big John? What? I don't know what you're pointing at. Was that a producer move?
He producer moved you. He hit you with the producer move.
We don't have breaks.
I know you don't have breaks. So why are you pointing at?
I would just say I think he's still on, which is fine. He's not still on.
That's Jordy from the Delco Whispers. In the background.
Chuckling,
what's up, Jordy? You still there?
Hey, yeah, I got this dog right now. He's losing her damn mind. She's got a ton of takes on Ben Simmons, but all of them are too hot for the air.
Oh, we got it. We got one more Ben Simmons call that might spark up some drama. Then we're getting a little Flyers talk. Where Jordy's going to dominate the conversation. Mike, you're saying that Simmons and Embiid are not liking each other? What does that mean? And go fuck yourself for bringing this into consideration right now.
Well, sorry about that. What's up, Jordy? It's Mike Dodd from Delco, baby.
Jesus.
just wanted to
go back
bring
to your
up
shanty.
The only thing that I'm worried about is the Sixers are on the verge of probably one of the most dominant dynasties ever if they stay together. But you just saw Simmons' comments saying he's the best rookie, no doubt about it. There's no way Simmons isn't, seeing how he took over this team with the beat out down the line that could cause a problem.
But they're entirely two different players that could feed each other and make each other better. If they were the same position, okay, I can kind of see that. But
It's not like an Okafor Noel situation where like they're in the way of Embiid doing well. Like they, you have to have five good basketball players for your basketball team to be good. Do you think that the Warriors were like, no, we probably shouldn't bring Kevin Durant here because like we already have good players and Steph Curry might be worried that Kevin Durant is like more of a draw. Like you need to have a bunch of good players on your team. In the same token, it's like, are these guys rooting against Markelle Fultz coming back and doing really well? Like, no, you need him to do well. You want him to be confident. And these guys are teammates. Like there, I'm sure will be little like seeds of resentment among them, but like you, if we're going to be successful, if we don't want to have an Oklahoma City situation where the team just dissolves because no one can get along, like we're going to have some kind of synergy.
And there's nothing to suggest other than random Delco blowhards calling into radio stations and trying to start shit for no
Quit
reason.
Quit starting rumors. This is how it's like, oh, yeah, I heard on the radio that Simmons and Embiid don't like each other. It's like, no, bro, you said that. Jesus. You said it on the radio.
And pretty soon there's going to be a Brendan Morlindros situation where one's fucking the other's wife.
Right, or Jeff Carter and Mike Richards situation.
Exactly. Like, so calm.
Even if there is a Kobe and a Shaq situation there, those bastards won championships. So
exactly.
They can hate each other all they want. Just get us some rings. I'm ready for some more parades.
Exactly, exactly. Mike, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. I don't know how to get rid of you. Okay. There you go. Kyle, we'll talk some birds real quick. What do you got, Kyle?
Hey, go birds.
Go birds, baby. Super Bowl champs.
Hey, let's go. Is this our first episode since they were champs? Hey, let's go, champs.
So, hey, Jordy, fuck Delco. Fuck you.
Yo, you're going to have an army of Delco Knights at your door by the time that you hang up this phone.
What's your address, pal?
That was it. Oh, Jordy's a Fairmount boy now. He escaped the Delco ranks.
No, I'm asking this guy his address we can send the legions.
Oh, he said fuck Jordy, fuck Delco, and hung up.
Oh, he hung up? That was his Eagles point?
That was his Eagles point.
I mean, we could talk Eagles for a half second, though. I'm curious as to what you guys think about the free agency signings that we've had, and what direction do you think we should go in the draft?
I mean, I have been so, so wrong about everything about this franchise all the way up through the season and through basically the Super Bowl that – I had to look inwardly to try to decide if I am, in fact, right about anything. Do I even exist anymore? like that's how wrong I have been about this franchise. So I'm not. Oh, it was a great wrong.
Yeah.
A great wrong. As I said, I'd rather win and look bad than lose and look good. So when it comes to the Eagles, I am a blind sheep follower at this point. I apologize to Howie Roseman. I apologize to Doug Peterson. I am a loyal follower at this point. They are my shepherds, and I am the sheep. So I love everything that they've done.
Fair enough, Jordy. Do you have any thoughts on the free agency guys like Haloti Ngata and Richard Rodgers or whatever, and maybe any ideas about the draft? Who you want in the draft? What positions you want in the draft?
Yeah, my only issue with free agency is losing Bo Allen to Tampa because that means that the amount of cutoff jean shorts on the roster significantly decreases, and I think that you really need those in order to win championships. So, I mean, I guess if we're looking ahead to the draft, that's just something that I'm looking at in the combine is who shows up with cutoff jean shorts and just sign them up right away, first round, and then we're back in business going for round two.
I will say this about Baby Bue. He played 60% of the snaps last year at D-tackle, and he was not a starter, so he was a big contributor. So having Haloti and Michael Bennett come in and pick up that slack is going to be big, real big. But also, free agent-wise, you got to love the Mike Wallace upgrade over Torrey Smith as a definite upgrade. And with the draft this year, I can't see how they don't go after offensive line.
Yeah, I'm glad we agree on that.
You think offensive line?
I was looking at it, and I think the slot corner stuff is stupid. I think that that's a lot of national outlets that are putting slot corner on these mock drafts. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. We already got four. So we got to figure that out without adding another rookie. I think that would be tough. So I think it's offensive line all the way. I'm even looking interior.
I think the Eagles got away with a lot last year due to Doug Peterson's great play calling and putting players in the position to make plays and to the best of their ability. I don't think Stephen Wiskowski or whatever his name is.
Wisniewski is as
good as he was. Even Jason Kelsey, I think he played out of his shoes and a big left tackle, big
V.
Big V.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Obviously, we've seen him struggle at times, especially at the beginning of last year when he took over. So,
and now we know he's definitely a reserve guy. We're not going to mold.
Really?
I don't think so. They big say v? He's a starter. Yeah, yeah, they're saying they say he's a starter.
He started in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but yeah. But you got to add more talent to the line. You can't just be like, okay, we got Big V, and he's going to replace Jason.
But
Peters.
He's our back. I mean, he's our backup, though. Going into next season, you're going to have Peters. You're going to have Lane Johnson.
You said the key guy. We can't extend Wisniewski. I think you got to save money somewhere. To get a young – I was looking at Isaiah Wynn, guard-center combo, can back up all three of these guys, and then you have him that slides right in after – you got to let Wisniewski go.
In the first round, you're going to take a guard, though?
He's a guard-center tackle.
He plays everything. He plays anything.
Regardless, we got big Lane Johnson. As long as he lays off the sauce, he will be there.
Yeah.
Steady, as always.
Brandon Brooks is a beast.
Kelsey, no reason why he shouldn't be back.
I mean, Suamalo should be able to play soon, too. I like our offensive line depth. I think
not to mention Peters.
Peters, yeah, Peters is an absolute stud, one of the greats of all time. I think that we need I think we should pick up a linebacker. There's a couple of linebackers that I like. Leighton Vander Esch, I think, is a stud. He's looking pretty solid. The guy out of Alabama. I don't think the guy from Georgia will still be around, but I think that there's linebacker could help us, and tight end, too.
Yeah.
I don't know if the tight end from Penn State might look good. There's one from, like, Gesicki might work for us. He's supposed to be a freak. And
my shoulder will be healed by then, so.
Yo, maybe Smitty could suit up. Yeah. What's that 40 time look like, Smitty?
Not good at all.
You smooth out of the cuts or what?
that was my biggest detriment, not only in athletics, but life was my 40 time. Never really broke five
what
flat.
About the three cone? How's your three cone?
My three cone was great. My
really?
Three cone was great. My shuttle was great.
How's your blocking?
My blocking was shit.
My mitts. You can't cut it without the blocking.
No. My mitts were my greatest attribute out there.
It is funny looking at all the tight end prospects because the scouting reports are hilarious. These days there's so many pass catching tight ends that all the scouting reports are like, he can catch the ball really well, can't block, and then you find the guys that, oh, great blocker, can't catch. So it's just.
I would take the guy who can catch the ball and try and teach him how to block. That's where my mind is
at. We have a lot like Billy Brown and the guy from last year.
It's
like,
not that easy, especially if you didn't grow up blocking.
But if you have to pick one or the other.
Yeah. I would try to adapt to be a pass catcher.
Really?
Absolutely,
you would take the guy who's the blocker?
Well, just think, like, if you've been avoiding contact with these behemoths all your life and then all of a sudden told to just ragdoll one to the ground, an NFL football player out of nowhere in camp, you're going to get the fucking dick beaten
out of
you.
Well, because it's the size differences, too. I mean some
it's
of these
everything.
Pass catchers are a little more underweight because they got speed. So I mean,
I'm not saying people can't do it. Yeah. If you could recall, Lane Johnson went into Oklahoma as a quarterback, and then all of a sudden he was a tight end, and then all world right tackle. But it's a very, very difficult aspect.
Johnson and Peters.
Peters is a tight end as well.
What do you guys think about? I've seen a lot of mock drafts that have them taking the dude Geis out of LSU, the running back. Do you guys think that running back is that pressing of a need that you take someone in the first round?
As long as all-star Donnell Pumphrey comes back and really takes his team.
You know he's the highest paid running back on our roster right now?
That's unbelievable.
Isn't that bad news?
I mean, Ajayi's taking the rings. I'm very, very excited to see what Corey can do with his career. I mean, that guy can be elite both in pass catching. Yeah. And
but this could be Ajayi's last year.
The fact that he wasn't drafted out of Wisconsin is mind-boggling. But, yeah, this could be Ajayi's last year, but
that's why it might be worth it to take someone. I don't know.
But what Doug Peterson and Deuce have done is they've made nobody irreplaceable at the most replaceable position in the NFL.
Another name I've heard a lot is Justin Reed out of Stanford, who's Eric
pick.
Reed's brother.
Yeah.
And he could play in the slot. He could eventually replace one of these safeties.
I love that pick because it's so hard to find a good safety. It's like, let's start now. That guy looks the part. He's got the size. He's super productive. Yeah.
He's part of the Reed family. Yeah. He's a beast.
There's
nothing you can bring against that.
I mean, we did have
it's like a Dawkins. A Dawkins we had is spawn when he's out there. I think
or
he's
a Matthews.
Yeah, it's a good point. Good point with the Matthews. Great fourth round, fifth round pick. Fucking.
Yeah, that was a tough one. But he was on the team for about 18 years. He just stuck around.
In 2011 draft. Alex Henry, fourth round. Casey Matthews, fifth round.
Oh, this is bad. Yeah.
Danny Watkins, first round.
I don't have to think about these guys anymore.
I know you don't, but you see how there could have been like some resentment and questioning Howie Roseman.
Because he's justifying that.
Looking at the rest of the NFL, I mean, the Rams are kind of doing a dream team type thing right now. Does that scare you? Does that worry any of you fellas?
No, it doesn't, though. I mean, I know Michael Brockers is a great DN, but, you know, I looked at the depth and people were talking. Once you look at it, I didn't think it was as deep as ours. Mm-hmm. It was like Michael Brockers, Donald, who's the guy that they just added?
Sue.
So there's three.
Who can really make or break your fucking franchise.
I mean, they have really strong corners now. They added a couple guys, and they
added wide receivers.
Yeah.
Didn't they add a wide receiver?
Well,
Sammy Watkins left, and they
Brandon Cooks.
There you go, there you go. So McVay did a good job in his rookie campaign, and one of his biggest attributes was he's a player's coach, and people believed in him. As long as they buy into the system, I think anything's possible. But
yeah,
changing it up a lot with a lot of personalities like Sue coming in,
it could shake it up a little bit.
Yeah.
How about Kirk? Our guy Kirk Cousins is now in Minnesota.
Bring the Viking skull bullshit to the link Thursday week one for another massacre.
That made me feel really good that Kirk Cousins went there. It just makes me feel calm because I don't believe in him in the least.
Yeah.
No, I don't either, and I feel bad for Casey Keenum and Bridgewater. To be honest with you. Nobody believed in him up there.
Yeah, that's tough.
Kirk Cousins.
That's tough. That's a slap in the face,
it's
honestly.
It's a rough look. But a loss with the Eagles and the Sixers talk. We got some hockey action, yo. Not related to Jose from Norristown, that bum. But we got fucking hockey action tomorrow night. Flyers at the Penguins. Game one of the 2018 Stanley Cup Finals playoffs. Jordy. Let me hear it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are going to come in here hot talking about how the Penguins swept the Flyers in the regular season series. Those people are buffoons, and they're not able to think with their brains. Because if you think for 1 second that the Flyers didn't foresee this matchup happening at some point in the playoffs, you're an idiot. And they're just playing the long con this whole way through. I mean, you lose four straight to a team in the regular season, then you head into the playoffs. The Penguins right now, they're thinking, oh, this is going to be a cakewalk. This is, you know, basically we're getting a bye to the second round. All of a sudden, once the Flyers, they get Captain Claude turning his shit around. He's got 102 points on the year, like an absolute savage.
God,
you can also pick up a Claude Giroux shirt on store.barstoolsports.com. Let's fucking go, Claude. But, you know, the Flyers, they've got their captain going. They've got, you know, they've got Provorov going. He's, I think, tied for first in the league among defensemen with goals. They've got Ghost going. He's fourth among the league in defensemen with points. So they're getting scoring from everywhere, and they've got the Penguins where they want them.
Jordy, who is someone that hasn't maybe been on the casual fans' radar throughout the season that they might see really show up big in the playoffs?
Well, I mean, if they keep him on the top line the way that he's been the last couple of games, I'd say that Michael Raffle is probably going to be good to put home a couple big goals here and there. Anytime you can play with Claude Giroux and Sean Couturier, you're going to be put in positions where as long as your stick's on the ice, they're going to find a way to put the puck on it, and then you can put it in the back of the net. And then another guy who, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing as, you know, as he starts getting more comfortable here and how he handles the playoffs is Oscar Lindblom. I mean, this is a kid who, you know, Flyers fans were probably the most butthurt about that he didn't make the opening night roster, spent a ton of time in the AHL this year. But, you know, he's starting to kind of come into his own a little bit. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see him have, you know, he might not have a ton of points in this series, but he could definitely, you know, be some sort of contributor to a big-time goal.
And are you worried about this Lil B curse? He seems like he kind of threw his weight behind the Penguins. That seems it's got to be a little troubling.
Well, so Lil B, so this is where I'm very confused. So he put out a tweet saying that he's, I guess, blessing Pittsburgh, and then 3 minutes later put out another tweet saying that he's blessing the floor. So, I mean, that's a move out of, you know, Stephen A's book right there. I mean, he's just playing both sides of the coin here. So I
you broke up a little
really
bit. You broke up a little bit. He blessed Pittsburgh, and then what happened?
And then a few minutes after that, he decided to bless Philly as well.
So oh, so a dual blessing. Oh,
it's
wow.
A,
so
it's
we're
right out of Stephen
Pope.
A's. Yeah, it, I mean, that just going right after Stephen A, getting both sides of the coin there. So I just don't really understand his tactics there. But anyone who's been following with the City of Champions and with Barstool knows that, Roan, you've taken over as the curse god, especially amongst rappers. So, I'll take the Roan curse being on our side over any Lil B curse pretty much 7 days a week.
Wow, I appreciate that. That's great support, and that solidarity is truly why we're in the position we are today.
Yeah, all we got, all we need, right?
Jordan, you're not concerned about the lack of goaltending the Philadelphia Flyers have expressed and shown in, I don't know, the past 50 fucking years as being a detriment to this Stanley Cup playoff run?
Oh, it's definitely going to bite us in the ass for at least one of these games coming up here. But, I mean, the Flyers right now in their system, they have, you know, besides this kid Carter Hart, who will be up in about 2 years, in their system, they have about six or seven of the exact same guys.
Jordy, stop talking like a Flyers fucking faithful for a second. That has been the same argument for Flyers fans for decades. I'm talking about now. What the hell happened to Michael Nerverth? What is happening with him?
No. I was going a different place than that. What I'm saying is, besides that kid, all their goalies are the same in the sense that they can either be the best goalie in the world for about three or four games, or they can look like they've never put on pad before for three or four games.
Steve Mason.
So all these goalies, they have the ability to either get really hot or about as ice cold as can get. So, I mean, you kind of just have to sit back and pray a little bit that, you know, you figure if one of them goes down, maybe another one's hot. You can just kind of it's a lateral movement depending on whatever goal you go to. You just keep cycling them out.
But that's what happened in 2010 with Leighton and Brashear. And who was the third one?
Bobrovsky.
Was it Bobrovsky?
Yeah.
Sergei Bob?
Jesus Christ. Well, I mean, Elliot, well, do you think Elliot actually...
But you didn't go to the final in 2010.
Well, but you didn't take it down. I mean, that was pure... That was a lot of cursing and blessings on our side, too, coming back from 0-3 against the Bruins, especially down 3-0 in Game 7. But do you think Elliot really has the gusto to freaking put this team on their back if need be? We all know goaltending is what makes or breaks a Stanley Cup team. This team has got firepower like they haven't seen in the past couple of years and can probably score a little bit better and get you more out in that front. But do you think Elliott like really has what it takes to get you through to a Stanley Cup championship, which is the fucking goal?
I don't think that he necessarily – I think that he can very easily accidentally have it in him. I don't think that he has him in him naturally. But like I said, I mean, none of these guys – you never know what you're going to get in between the pipes with any of these goalies, Elliott, Neuwirth, or Peter Mrazek. I mean, you never know what you're getting in net. All you know is there's a chance that they could steal the game for you, or there's a chance that they could absolutely lose it for you. I mean, right now, though, it looks like, you know, so the last four games that the Flyers have played against the Penguins this year, the Penguins have scored 5 goals in all those games. So, I mean, I guess the goal here is just, you know, score 6. Just know that your goalies probably aren't going to give you a ton of help. Score six, and get out of there.
So from a casual fan as myself, I'm not a Flyers diehard. I'm a Flyers fan. Obviously, I'm going to root for them, but I never played the game of hockey growing up, so I don't know the intricacies of the sport and don't pretend to know and tell other people, like, here's the thing, here's what's going on. But from an outsider's fan's perspective who might not know exactly what's going on, I see Michael Nerverth 2 years ago shut out Washington Capitals in Game 5 in one of the best goaltending performances in recent history for the Philadelphia Flyers, and come in the next year behind Steve Mason, arguably better than him, if not the best backup in the NHL, and come into this year as probably the starter. What the hell happened with him?
Yeah, I mean, you could be the biggest hockey expert in the world, but if you are not a goalie, you really never know what happens with those guys. I mean, they're so fucked in the head, all of them, really.
Which is a good thing. I want my goalies to be crazy, just maybe not Brzgalov batshit, but have a little bit of nuts in them. It's like, it's a great thing. You have to have it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, though. It's you know, they can be crazy good or they can be crazy bad. I think the thing with Neuwirth is what I've always said since day one, since they got him, is that he's the kind of guy who is – he should be constantly one of the better backups in the league. I do not think that he has what is there between his ears to kind of come in and get, you know, 60 games a season, 70 games a season. I don't think that he can kind of come in here and, you know, go on a tear and play, you know, 28 games in the playoffs. I just don't think that, you know, he has that consistency up in his brain to kind of, you know, stay hot, you know, kind of stay like look at, you know, a guy like Carson Wentz. You know, he says, you know, he never gets too high, never gets too low. So everything's just kind of even keeled for him throughout the entirety of, you know, the game or a season or whatever. Well, like if you took the polar opposite of Carson Wentz, you probably get something similar to Michael Neuwirth. So, I mean, when he's feeling it, he's good to go. But the moment that shit starts getting off the rails a little bit, you know it's not going to end well. So, yeah.
So he's a batshit head case.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, sometimes, you know, batshit head cases can get hot. But, you know, other times, you know. So I guess we'll see. Obviously, it would be in the Flyers' best interest to help out their goalies by staying the hell out of the penalty box for this series. You know, if you keep giving Pittsburgh power plays, they're going to pump the back of the net. So
I'm going to give you a stat, Jordy. I'm going to give you a stat real quick. The Pittsburgh Penguins are first in the league in their power play percentage, and the Philadelphia Flyers are 29th in the league in their penalty kill percentage. Is that good?
So you see right there, that's the that's a good old fashioned case of what the fuck are we going to do if we take a penalty? No, it is. It's not good at all. But, you know, I think that, you know, everybody that knows, the Pittsburgh Penguins, the amount of firepower that they have on offense, you've got guys like Crosby who love him or hate him. He's the best in the world. You got Evgeny Malkin, you've got Phil Kessel, American hero. You know, you can do all you want to try to stop those guys if they have a power play, but they're still going to find ways to put the puck in the back of the net. So, you know, we could be, you know, the best penalty killing team in the world. We could be the worst. I still don't think that it matters against the Penguins because they're going to find ways to score on the power play regardless. So the only way to not give up power play goals to them is to just stay out of the box. That's just plain and simple.
Do you think this series will resemble the previous 2012 series, or is it going to be pond hockey again? Are we going to get scores of 98, or do you think it's going to be a tight checking affair?
I think that it's really going to start to break open a bit. I don't think that, you know, the Penguins have, again, probably the most loaded lineup of forwards in the league right now. I don't think that they're great defensively. So, you know, combine that with the fact that, you know, the Flyers are pretty close to them in terms of, you know, lethal weapons at forward. So I think, you know, once both teams get into a shootout a little bit, plus you're also going to get, you know, plenty of, you know, big hits. I mean, the energy of this series is going to be wild. So no one's really going to want to be taking it too calm. No one's going to want to, you know, playing, you know, a slow brand of hockey, a cautious brand of hockey. So, I mean, there's a reason why, you know, the first four games of the series, they're on, you know, NBCSN, NBCSN, NBC, NBCSN, while other games are getting put on the Golf Channel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's because this series is going to be, you know, kind of must watch.
What's your prediction? What you got?
I'm going Flyers in six.
Wow.
Mostly because I won't be able to handle a game seven, so I'm just praying for six, but...
There you go. You're already here. I don't even want to throw out a prediction.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be such a homer prediction. Like, realistically, Penguins are going to win 4-0. Like, come on. Let's be realistic.
Have faith in the run curse.
That's all I have faith in. Trust me.
I'll give
that's
you a smaller prediction. I think Gudas will absolutely get suspended. I think he'll destroy somebody, and it will be out the rest of the playoff series. But it will set the tone, and I think the Flyers will win 4-3.
I will also say G is going to come out to play.
Yeah.
A la 2000.
If we get another hit
playoffs,
like that to lead off game six, that'd be incredible.
Love it. Love it. One of the best memories in recent Flyers history. We'll go back to the calls here. We got Luke with Sixers backup center question. What do you got, Lucas?
Yo, I got a question. Who do you think should be the backup, Rashawn or Amir?
To me, I think that Rashawn should be the backup. Amir is the only player on the Sixers roster and the only one, and it's been a while since it's been like this, where I kind of groan when he comes in this into the game. Like, everybody else on the roster is like, damn, I really like that guy.
Yeah.
And Amir doesn't really do that for me. I know that he has some skills that Rashawn doesn't have. He's kind of just more of an anchor, but Rashawn has more of that X factor, a little bit more of the bounce.
I agree with you 100% about that. Ah, shit. What's Amir? Okay, what's going on? But I will say this. I think Brett Brown trusts him a little more than Rashawn. Rashawn can get a little out of control, especially earlier in the season when he was lighting it up whenever he was in there. Sparked a lot of energy, but also kind of like flailed around a little bit. And I think Brett Brown needed to get him a little bit of discipline. Right now, I do agree that it's Holmes. I think Johnson's very necessary. But here's the question. Why didn't they keep Trevor Booker over Amir Johnson? I would have liked that move a lot.
I think you just need a center. I think it was just a center question, and Trevor Booker kind of plays more of a four. I think that that really is what it comes down to. I mean, why do you not keep Trevor Booker over Jared Bayless, who even when there are blowouts, he still can't get in the game?
True.
But I guess it's really just the composition of the roster and the locker room.
Yeah, I liked TB out there. I thought he was a real spark plug for this team.
I didn't hate him, and he's going to play in the playoffs for Indiana.
Exactly. He might come back to bite us. Thank you very much, Luke. We're rounding down here. We got about 5-10 more minutes left to go.
Do you want to take a call, or do you want to just shit on the Phillies for the next like 5 minutes?
Well, that's the thing. that's exactly what I was getting to, and I wasn't going to shit on them.
Nah, I know.
There's no shitting. The boys won three in the last four. Yeah.
Deserve to be a little shit on.
I don't
agree.
Amount of shit.
I don't think they deserve to be shit on. I think Gabe Kapler and probably J.P. Crawford need to be shit on.
Oh, yeah. I was even going to give Crawford a pass.
Real quick, I
have a take on Gabe Kapler.
I love it.
So I think that he, just like the Flyers are long-conning the Penguins, Gabe Kapler has to know how coaches in this city operate. And how the fans operate with the coaches. I mean, you think about how much people hated Doug Peterson last year. You think about, you know, how many people were on the fire Brett Brown train. I think that Gabe Kapler knows that in order to be a beloved coach in Philadelphia, you have to be hated first, and that's why he's
so he's intentionally fucking up. He's like, I just might as well have them hate
Charlie,
me.
Charlie Manuel, another example.
Well, that's why he's coming out of the gate as such a bozo. You bring up a good point that we've won recently with player coaches. Charlie Manuel and Doug Peterson are player coaches who understand how to communicate. Benching Odubel Herrera right off the bat, and getting off on the wrong foot. Like that's,
or Nick Williams just like not being able to communicate with him and having any idea why he's not playing.
Yes, exactly. That's what it is. It's not so much the X's and O's of you feel like this guy's better. Like, we get that.
In the most player-coach-friendly sport, where that's like the biggest necessity in all four sports,
and you can
arguably
win with hard asses. I just meant
it depends on the dictation of the team. Like, Larry Bowa was a hard ass and came in for Terry Francona, and all of a sudden they were a 500 team because Larry Bowa needed to install that regiment hard dick atmosphere in the clubhouse. But then again, it got too much. That's where Charlie Manuel Charlie Manuel came in, laid back on them, and they ended up winning a World Series. I just think Gabe Kapler is very, very inexperienced, and the only experience that he has of being a player is with this sabermetric stuff, in which he is trusting way too much.
I don't know what the fuck he thinks he's doing. Like, when is it going to pay off pulling people after 70 pitches? Like,
that's the thing. Statistically, a million times when it happens, eventually, 51% of the times, it might work.
Like,
what the fuck
are we doing? Like, what?
Of the time, it works every
it
time.
Seems like he's trying to save up these pitchers' arms, but by the time that he's going to need all this extra juice that they have, like, we're going to be out of contention. Like, you can't just have, like, players throw 70 pitches a game and expect to, like, the bullpen to carry you. When it was 3-3 the other game and he took out Arrieta after, like, 73 pitchers, and then we wind up losing 6-3, it's like, we shouldn't be losing that game. Not to the Marlins, not with Arrieta starting.
Yeah, the first game of the season was obviously the most troublesome one, where they were down 5-0 and Aaron Nola gets taken out after 68, 69 pitches, and then he uses, like, 20 fucking
skateboarding?
Yeah, Jordy, what are you doing? You're on the road, kid?
I'm just picking up my dog's shit right now, actually.
That's perfect for when we're talking Philly.
Yeah, I'm gonna mute you for a minute. Very windy, very, very Hurricane Andrew-esque.
I'll mute myself
down there.
Yeah, let him mute himself and then come back in when you're ready.
Yeah, when you're good to go. When you're good to go. But honestly, I think Gabe Kapler got a really quick case of tough love, especially from Matt Klintak, and the powers that be, because this is Klintak's boy. They're already talking about replacing him a little bit. Ken Rosenthal came out
about
with a little
Klintak,
piece.
You mean? Yeah.
No, no, we're replacing Gabe Kapler, saying how it was like an unmitigated disaster. Five fucking games into his administration.
I was just gonna say, you bring the first game. That's what I brought up Odubel, but it's also like we didn't know that we didn't have Hunter and Neshek until like the day of.
Yeah,
and he did. So how do you do that? How do you – like, that's where you got to adjust and be like, you know what? I would normally go to the bullpen here, but I don't have my bullpen today. Yeah. I mean, that's so simple.
It just doesn't – I mean, it doesn't make sense that he's being this closed off. I mean, we saw Nick Williams hit a home run last night that won the game. It's like, oh, well, it seems like this guy is actually a good player and really could be helping. And like, we shouldn't be alienating this young player on our team. Like, our team is so young and, like, their minds are so, like – they're in their formal – like – formative stages of learning.
Exactly. They're infants.
They're infants. They're little babies. So, like, why, like, we need to be kind of coddling them a little bit instead of, like, alienating them.
I agree 1,000,000%. And I think Gabe Kapler kind of got a dose of harsh reality this first week. I think he got a talking to. And you could even see it in the Marlins series a little bit. Granted, they're playing the Marlins, who stink out loud. Now they're playing the Reds, who
playing
also
Marlins
stink.
And the Reds were a blessing.
Yeah.
Like, getting to the rain delay, I was like, thank God.
Yeah.
I
think he loosened his pants up a little bit, and we'll see what happens. But it's just like some of the things he's a weird dude.
Weird dude.
Which I liked coming in. But now, like, they're saying after wins, they have fog machines and strobe lights and shit in the locker room. What the hell is going on in there? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I don't understand it.
It's like the scene in The Simpsons where they're at the steel mill. It's like we work hard, we play hard, and it turns into like a gay steel mill.
I wonder if we're starting a gay steel mill.
I wouldn't mind if it gets done. That steel mill in The Simpsons looked like it was benefiting society. It looked like it was putting up buildings. A lot of hard work.
If it gets
there.
Results, if exactly. That's the result of the steel mill, that we're fucking making it happen, but we can't just be having a gay steel mill for the fucking hell of it.
No. And that should wrap up this edition of First Time, Long Time Flyers tomorrow. We hope to be kicking this puppy off every single week from now on, trying to make it consistent. Hopefully the powers that be, i.e. Dave Portnoy, finally listens to an episode one time. But till then, we just like talking Philly sports and feel like we need to get it.
We
got
to get it off our chest.
Yeah,
we're on the big stage now. We got a couple playoff series coming.
And that's why no one has patience with Kapler, because it's like, damn, we're used to winning championships around here now. Like, we win around here now.
And we got to wait for him to learn how to manage a bullpen.
Fucking 4-5, man.
Especially
what the hell is this?
Especially when they're cock teasing us with playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, early, come on, man. Can't be doing that. But yeah, we'll see you later.